I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the Stompcast with me, Dr. Alex George. This is the podcast where I go for a walk with a guest to take a little wander into their life. This week I'm stomping with Sir Alan Sugar's 2023 apprentice, lawyer and gold medal winning boxer, Marnie Swindles. Weeks before her 9th birthday, Marnie lost her dad and spent many years looking for an outlet for her anger and her grief. When she was 17, Marnie walked into a boxing club and found a sense of freedom, release and a community. When she was 17, Marnie walked into a boxing club and found a sense of freedom, release and community that would go on to shape her life. As the only female boxer in the club, she was accepted with open arms and found a real sense of belonging. After 6 years of competing and winning awards like the renowned Haringey Boxing Cup, it was in a London boxing club that Marnie met a barrister who encouraged her to pursue a career in law, and 2 years later she was called up to the bar. Only a few years later, she went on to win The Apprentice. It's clear to me that if Marnie sets her mind to something, she has the resilience and mindset to go on to be successful. Her current focus is her boxing gym chain called The Bronx, which she hopes will go on to inspire others to develop that mental resilience and ability to do whatever they want to in their lives. I'm excited for this conversation, and we're going to focus on three different topics across the parts this week. In part one, I want to learn how to build confidence that can bring you a £250,000 investment. In part two, let's think whether grief can be a great motivator. And in the final part, let's consider why women should be leading the boardrooms and countries of this world. It's going to be a great conversation. Let's get started. Welcome to the Stompcast. Thank you for joining me. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Can I firstly say that I love the outfit? I love your name and I love your outfit. The two things immediately like about you. Marnie is such a lovely name, and your outfit today is appropriate because you're covered in terms of the rain. Although you didn't have, you don't have a hood. You did bring an umbrella, but I was really hoping that you didn't so that I could make a joke about selling you. You're going to have that all your life now, aren't you? Someone trying to sell you something.
Well, I wanted
like
to bring,
sell a pen.
I wanted
that.
To bring a little glamour to the podcast, Alex.
You have definitely. You've got me with my muddy boots and you with your very, very fancy boots. And you've actually, even for the first time I've ever seen in kind of last 5 years of, I guess, doing radio or TV, all that kind of stuff, you've actually attached your mic to your boot.
I have, indeed. I went for a Miss Congeniality.
Which I actually think is genius. Which is genius, because it means that it can just, the wire just runs up the inside of your jacket straight onto your.
It means I'm
top.
Ready for anything. I have to protect you in this park, Alex.
Yeah.
I
feel very safe.
Out.
You not only have the biggest umbrella in the park, but you're also a person with some serious skills, shall we say.
I don't know about that. I'm still, people ask me a lot, they say, give me business advice, give me this advice, and I'm still really just figuring it out, and I think it's important to be transparent about that. I'm still working.
Well, we're all doing life for the first time, aren't we?
Exactly.
We're all doing it first time. Well, welcome to the Stompcast. I'm really excited to have this conversation. And like you said, we both have had to go through the kind of first of like going into the public eye and then trying to make sense of it all. Okay, I'm not comparing Apprentice to Ireland in that
it
sense.
It has a lot of similarities.
I guess. Well, it's reality in terms of that sense, isn't it? And the other big thing is you don't have any control of the edit. Do you? There's a lot of filming going on and you don't know what's going to make it in, right?
Yeah.
So I bet that was a challenge in itself. So yeah, it's been about, what is it? Is it 8 or 9 months? How long has it been since you finished the filming of it?
It has been, well, I finished the filming last June. So
I finished the filming a long time ago.
Yeah. So me, the actual tasks feel like a lifetime ago now. But then it was aired this year. So this
June.
March 2023 is when.
So it went through to March. Is it March? Is it that long, March? When does it end? When was the final?
End of March.
End
time.
Of March is the
That's
final.
That's when I found out I won. And since then, it has just been the steepest learning curve ever, both in business, in media, in just life. Learned a lot of life lessons.
What's your top three things you've learned since winning The Apprentice then?
Learning to be really decisive.
Okay.
That's a big one for me. And I realised that that's something I actually take away from Lord Sugar. He never dilly-dallies in his approach. He's very to the point, makes decisions quick and moves on. I have a tendency to overthink and overanalyse and really try and hash everything out. But there is some power to just getting it done, getting on with it.
Why do you think it's important to be decisive? Aside from the obvious of, that you make a decision, but why is decisiveness over perhaps thinking of things for longer better, do you think?
There is some deep rabbit holes you can go down if you overthink everything. And ultimately what I've learned is there isn't actually an objective, correct answer for anything. You know, I used to dance when I was younger, and they used to say, if you mess up on stage, no one in the audience will know. So it's just, your dance is whatever it is in that moment. And it's the same thing with these decisions. It's like, I can't go wrong. I have to make a decision, stand by it, and move forward. What's worse is the delay, is not making the decision.
And an assumption that inaction is actually truly inaction. Not doing something is doing something, of course, isn't
it? Yes, well, it's delaying, it's procrastinating. Not doing anything, I think, can have a really damaging effect. It loses momentum. Mm. So that's a big one. And then I need to trust myself as well with that. Mm. Because...
So number two is trusting yourself.
Yeah, I think that's an important one. You have to have conviction in what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And even that first step you take out in anything you want to do, you have to believe it yourself before you can get and convince anybody else to believe in you.
Well, how do you kind of build an ability to trust yourself or believe in yourself? Because it's very challenging with that negative kind of self-talk. And I mean, we've titled, and you know, my overarching theme that I was thinking about for part one was like, how do you build the kind of confidence that gets you investment of £250,000? And actually the number doesn't really matter so much, and it isn't necessarily about people that are listening going, oh, I want to get an investment, I'm doing a business. I think it's much more about the kind of mindset of like, how do you convince yourself, let alone other people, that what you are doing or what you believe in or what your idea is or your direction is actually right, or that you even, you know, that you actually believe in it?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I never thought about it in the sense of, you know, I give people objective advice, like walk into a room like you own it, and almost superficial advice. But on a deeper level, like you said, before you can get to that point, you have to think it's real. I always think being able to visualize and imagine whatever it is you're trying to achieve and get clarity on that is probably the first point. Yeah. Because before that, it's kind of just this mess of stuff in your brain, and you're like, I've got no sense of direction, no sense of how I'm going to tackle this. So being able to visualize, imagine it, see that goal. For me, it was seeing that gym, seeing those doors open, what that would look like, and then sort of working back and start separating how you go about each task to make that happen.
Do you know, that's actually a really good point, because sometimes I guess when we're trying to convince ourselves that this is a good idea, or say to other people, look, this is, you know, this is what I believe in, or, you know, you might be a parent saying, look, I want to go off and study this, or I don't want to go to university, I want to do this, and you're trying to get people on board with it. I guess you sometimes end up selling the now rather than the where you want to be, isn't it? Like, kind of, you're trying to, you need to kind of focus on what is it that you actually want to achieve, what does that look like? And, you know, I've been campaigning for early support hubs for 3 years now. We achieved that recently for the pilot hub, so £5 million investment in these 10 hubs that we will then use as a basis to roll out and help hopefully a lot of young people, 500,000 when we get to that end point. And one of the things that I grappled with is like trying to really convince people and see the vision of something when you don't have something tangible in front of them to show them right now. Do you know what I mean? I can't just create you a hub right now. I need you to look at the evidence, but look at this vision and believe in it. And I used to kind of...
That's the hardest thing, by the way, trying to get people to see.
To see it.
See what you see.
As long as you've got to see it first, though, haven't you? So I used to imagine the kind of hubs and what they would look like. And there's a few charity ones I'd visited, they helped. And actually, there's an example from my uni days that I kind of think maybe I subconsciously use, is when I was working, or when I was studying to be a doctor, I really wanted to work in King's College Hospital. So what I did is I printed out a picture of the hospital and had it on my wall.
Yeah.
In my uni when I was studying. So whenever I felt frustrated or like, why am I doing this? I'd look at it and visualize it.
Yeah.
Do you do that kind of thing? Do you do visualization?
Do you know, I love a PowerPoint. I love a PowerPoint because whenever I have an idea, no matter how small or how big it is, I try and put the shapes together onto a PowerPoint. So even the layout of the gym, the architect, to explain to the architect, this is what I'm looking for, I just brought out loads of PowerPoints. And that step between getting this thing, this little seed that's in your mind, putting it out onto paper, speaking it into the world, like making it a tangible, objective thing, that's that first step.
So do you think you've almost got to sometimes see it to believe it almost? To use that kind of cliche, you need to like visualize it either in paper or speak it out loud or whatever it is for you to believe in what you want to achieve, whether it's working a certain job or starting a business, whatever. Do you think that a part of that is actually being able to truly picture what it looks like? What does that look like?
Truly picture what it looks like and also be honest with yourself. I think everybody wants to get rich. Everybody wants to get famous. And especially in a social media world, everyone thinks it's a quick fix. There's like a quick A to B route to take. And I think being honest with yourself and saying to yourself, how much am I actually willing to put in to make this happen? You know, this doesn't happen overnight. No one just throws a load of money at you or fame at you or anything. What steps are you prepared? What hurdles are you willing to surpass?
Is that number three?
Yeah, well, I think, in terms of my life lessons I've learned.
That. Or does that tie into number two?
No, I think that was always something I innately had. I've always been a grafter. Mm-hmm. I've always recognised that things take work, but I get approached by a lot of people asking for advice and they want that quick, how do I get rich quick? And there isn't a scheme that you have to visualise it, you have to be able to articulate it, you have to be able to share it, and then you have to be able to do that with passion. Mm-hmm. So for people who genuinely... who, after being honest with themselves and saying, what am I prepared to do? Those people, if they want to make it happen, I would say, see it, put it down somewhere, write it, write that business plan, and then learn to articulate it, learn to communicate it. And I think that's the biggest tip I would give someone.
It is a good point, though, that ties into, I guess, convincing yourself, as let alone others, that this is a good idea or something that you really want to achieve and going to achieve, is kind of going, okay, well, I want to do this. Like, for example, I was looking at a picture of, like, I want to go work in King's, but knowing, like, to work in King's, I need to end up in the top couple of percent of doctors graduating. I need to work hard on my exams, I need to work hard on my essays. What am I willing, you know, at what cost?
Yes.
What am I willing to do to achieve that? And perhaps that is part of it as well, because sometimes I guess inside your gut you're like, you really want to achieve this goal, but perhaps the discomfort in your gut sometimes comes from a place of like, this is going to be hard, and maybe it's acknowledging that and going, am I willing to do this? I can do it, am I willing to do it?
Yeah, and I think that's what separates the, you know, for want of a better phrase, the men from the boys, is that sense of who is actually willing to, when you are faced with what you have to do, who's actually willing to climb that ladder. You know, we get a lot of young boys come in who want to be the next big world champion, and they have, as you said, you had that picture of Kings, they'll have their picture of Mike Tyson or Muhammad Ali. And then you say to them, okay, but that's going to require you to go running every day. That's going to require you to have some really hard spots. That's going to require you to not be able to eat or drink or anything that you want to do and sacrifice so much. And at that point, that's when they start dropping off. And people start going, do you know what, I don't want this as much as I thought I did.
So it does bring you that point, doesn't it? And it reminds you of the Cristiano Ronaldo analogy of like, people go like, oh, he's so talented, yes. But he also was the first on the training pitch, the last off.
100%.
He drank like the stories, whether it's exactly true or not, I don't know. But apparently he'd drink like one glass of wine a year at Christmas, that was it. He would always be in bed by a certain time. He'd have an ice bath every day. Like it was the level at which he was willing to take it that made success almost inevitable.
Yeah.
Inevitable amount of success. We'll spin around here just because there's a bit of noise and we'll go that way. Tweeting of birds is lovely. Drilling of drills is not so lovely. So, yeah, I guess it's like that, at what cost is important. And I don't think that's like always needs to be like, oh, if you decide that's not worth it, that's a failure, or that somehow you're like weak-minded at all. You've actually made a reasonable assessment. Like, you might look at it and go, well, actually, if I need to spend ridiculous amount of hours working towards getting this place in this hospital, and it means I'm not going to spend quality time with my friends, I'm not going to be able to exercise, then maybe the cost is too dear.
Yeah,
exactly. Maybe the cost of being world champion in boxing is too expensive.
Yeah, and I think it's really good, and that going back to my point of being honest with yourself, I think that's a really good assessment to have, where you look at what this is going to take and you say, am I prepared to put that in? And when the answer is yes, that's when you know you've stumbled upon
the winning
what you're
formula.
Supposed to be doing with your life.
Yeah.
Because then it doesn't feel like work, you know, it feels like a pursuit, like a hunt. Like, I don't feel like business is work now. When I was in law, I used to dread every day going to court and be weighed down by it. And there's other people that didn't feel that way. They absolutely thrived in it. And now I feel like I've found what I'm supposed to be doing. But, you know, like you said, talent only takes people so far. What's the saying? Hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard.
That's so good. So. I love it. I love that. That's so good. I love a quote me. That's a really good one.
It's said a lot in the boxing gym, but for that reason, you know, people, some exceptionally talented people, but they just haven't got the metal for that particular thing. They just maybe haven't found what they need. I think a lot more needs to go into career guidance for young people. I think a lot of people find themselves on the wrong path. My mum was not academic at all. She was a cleaner my whole life. So she was always really hot on me getting that education and doing an academic degree. Mm. When actually, on reflection, looking back, I think I should have been doing something way more creative. I would have been happier. I love painting.
So perhaps, well, there's a bit of a joke then, perhaps, between the canvases that you enjoy, the two different kind of canvases.
I have had that crossover in my mind.
Have you had?
What can I do with this?
There needs to be a bit. Can you paint actual canvases that are lifted off the boxing floor, famous canvases?
I have got far too much going on right now, Alex, to be painting actual canvases. But I'll hope that idea in the retirement box.
But that when you run out of things you need to do in your life, and you're like, I've got loads of time, then.
Maybe.
Let Lord Sugar know about that one.
Well,
over.
You know, we joke about it, but I always say to myself, I don't think I'll ever get to that point where I'll stop. And it scares me because you think you do all this hard work now to be happy one day, but I don't see that ever coming to an end. I think I'll always want to do more and achieve more. And
I think the journey is very important. My granddad never retired. He was a businessman. He was a businessman until he passed away, and he truly loved the art of business. He loved the process of it, not the outcome. And I think actually I learned a lot from him, that he truly, really, and honestly lived a really great life. And I think it was full of diverse things, different challenges. And I think there's something to be said from that. I think we rush to retirement, but why? I mean, if you can, you know, there's definitely a level of, I don't know, you know, privilege of, you know, having a job that you actually enjoy, because a lot of people really have to work to live. But if you can find either something in your kind of outside of work life, or ideally in your work life, then retirement doesn't feel so necessary, perhaps, in the same way. Or at least if you are retiring, reducing working hours, it's so that you can go and do that thing that you love. And therefore, in my mind, you're not retiring. You're enriching your life, doing and working towards things you enjoy. So let's think about that lesson number three then. The number two, we did a nice winding, meandering lane on number two. What's number three of lessons since The Apprentice then?
It's a hard one. Just because there's so many, not because there's an absence of ideas. There's just so
I'm
many
pinning
things.
You down on
yeah,
three.
So many things. Learning to work with people has been difficult. Learning to lead and actually have all the weight on your shoulders. I've learned that heavy is the head that wears the crown, because everyone looks to you to have the answers, which is a privileged position to be in, and I wouldn't change it, but making sure everyone's happy, learning to motivate a workforce, it's not easy.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's not easy, but I guess that's the part of the joy of the challenge, I guess, is learning and doing that. Well, let's have a little think then. That's why I've, you know, aptly titled this. Well, we'll see what the final title of this part will be, but something along the lines of that kind of confidence that you need to go out and get an investment, and therefore, I guess, the confidence you need, you know, in life to walk towards any kind of goal, I guess. What would be your tips, looking back on your life, you know, from using kind of your experience and life experience from the days, you know, in boxing, you know, winning fights, also your involvement in kind of developing young people and looking at their confidence, and also with what you're doing now in business, what would you say are the important things that people can try and take away or do to build their own confidence, to believe in themselves a little bit more, whatever they're doing?
I mean, from one perspective, one thing that a lot of people ask me about, it's fairly a niche one, but how to have confidence as a woman in such a male-dominated industry. And my tip on that is, I suppose, fairly a unique one, because a lot of the time you hear a lot of women empowerment and the idea of really embracing that idea of being a woman, and I actually think the opposite has been more effective. The idea of going into a room not as a woman, but going in there as Marnie and going in there with my own assets and characteristics that I hope people respect for what they are, almost shifting the emphasis away from there being this woman's department and this man's department, and actually saying let's observe people's tact for who they are, not necessarily
so almost
a very
gender
specific approach.
Because I guess if we think about, like, we've got four people around us now, so it's myself, it's you, we've got producer Sophie, we've got Emma that works with me, we all have our own characteristics that have different kind of pros and cons, right? Everything you have will have pros and cons. So do you mean then stepping, is it looking beyond that lens of like, what is your gender? Is that what you mean? Looking at them more as a person?
Yeah, for example, when I first started boxing, when I first walked into the boxing club, it was pre-2012, so pre the time when women's boxing was allowed in the Olympics. And the first thing someone said, the coach said when I walked in was, you know, we train like guys here, you know, you've got to train like one of us. We're not going to accept any of that sort of girlish behaviour. And I took that comment on the chin, didn't think much of it. And then went into there and I trained like the guys, I sparred like the guys. I just became at one of what that role required, you know? So it no longer became Marnie the girl, it became Marnie one of the team. And I think the sooner we can get to that position, even with women's boxing, it's women's boxing and then just boxing, the sooner we can get to a place of it's just boxing, I think the more truly empowered women would be.
Because that must have taken a lot of confidence. Actually, I would say this, regardless of gender, going to a boxing gym, I mean, I know that I'm naturally quite introverted, that kind of thing would be quite intimidating. I you know, people that follow me and you've listened to the podcast before know that, you know, I've actually had a real anxiety about going to gym classes in general. I do now and I enjoy them, but I've had like a real anxiety about that. So I know it does take a lot sometimes to overcome that.
So
how did you kind of, yes, including the fact that you were the only woman in that gym at that time, but how did you overcome that and have the confidence to kind of go in there? Was it kind of a mental self-talk, or did it come more naturally to you?
I would say it came naturally to me because I come from a place of negating the fact that I'm a woman. So again, I go in there as who I am, and I know that I have resolve and I'm determined and I won't quit if we go for a run, and I'll push. And I think it's those characteristics that people respect. Whether those characteristics sit in the body of a man or a woman, I think people start to look past. And, you know, my experience, I sit at a lot of tables with just men, and even most of my coaching team are all men. And we're at a point now where I don't know if we even see the gender split anymore, you know?
It's fascinating to hear that. It really is interesting to hear
well,
that.
Well, because a lot of the time, and I think the wrong message is sometimes put out, because I have a lot of young girls approach me and say, you know, how do I go about this as a woman in business? How do I go about this as a woman in boxing? Mm. And my answer is you're almost falling at that first hurdle by putting yourself on a separate shelf. Like, go in there as you, own the room as you, and, you know, embrace all that you have to offer.
So part of that confidence is actually just really just focusing on what are my skills, what are the things that I can offer in this situation. Maybe part of it, even just doing something new, is like, well, I know that I've been resilient in the past, like I've got through lots of challenges before, like this is a new situation I'm facing perhaps, but I know that looking backwards, I've survived all those days and
absolutely.
I'm here today.
Absolutely. People are a lot stronger than they think, and I sometimes think people are very ready to put up the barrier of I don't belong there because I'm a woman, so I should avoid that situation. Mm. And it kind of makes it easier to digest why you're not putting yourself in those uncomfortable positions. Mm. But one of the things that everyone can attest to, that once you've faced a fear, that fear no longer becomes as scary. Mm.
There's a good analogy of what should you do if you think you've seen a ghost? It's turned towards the ghost. Don't run away. Because when you run away, you then believe that ghost is real. You've not faced it. And you then effectively, you'll always be chased by the ghost.
Exactly.
When you face the ghost and you see it for what it is.
Exactly. When you look at even from a medical perspective, like CBT and things, a lot of it is based on exposure therapy and actually confronting that fear and learning and bringing down your response to that. Mm. You know, so the more you make yourself uncomfortable, the better you'll be in the long run. But it's looking at that idea of long-term gain over that short-term discomfort.
So it's part of building confidence then, actually just accepting that feeling nervous or feeling discomfort about doing something is an inevitable part of the process.
Absolutely, absolutely. I don't think it's wise to try and protect people from that. I think it's part of our armoury we need to build is to go into difficult situations, confront them, and everything that you learn from that, you can then shift that into all these elements of your life, you know? Coming, for me, for example, coming from a very working class background, going into court for the first time.
That's a boxing ring in itself, isn't it?
It is. And again, with a boxing ring, making submissions to a judge who's perhaps extremely well educated, and I've got opposing counsel from some of the best legal firms in the UK, and I'm opposing them and I'm standing there representing something on my own. It's absolutely terrifying.
Yeah, it sounds scary.
Terrifying.
I did a mock bar trial when I was at, in A levels,
and
that was scary. That was scary
then.
Enough. That was scary. Yeah, we did right. We won the Welsh round, which was great. I went to a comprehensive school, state school. We certainly weren't the kind of school that would have been expected at the mock bar trial. We did rather good. We ended up doing quite well in the British rounds as well, the kind of UK rounds as well. So really good fun. I'm guessing you would have done something.
You have to look at your options. You have to go, what's my option here to back out? And, you know, what is the fear thing? Face everything and run away, or face everything and remain?
Well, I learned a really good life lesson when I was doing my A-levels, because I think it's one of the only times I've ever backed out of something, and it taught me so much. So I was supposed to, I did the mock bar trial, and actually I was pretty good at that, and that gave me confidence. But we came up against, or we came to a situation where basically we were invited to do debating. I think they'd recognised that we were good at it or something. I don't know. They invited us to this debating competition. And anyway, in the practice rounds we were doing within the school, I just had a couple of bad sessions. And I thought, oh, I can't do this. I'm not very good. I pulled out. And my friends went to do the debating competition. And they absolutely smashed it. And I sat on the sidelines watching them, absolutely seething that I wasn't stood up there doing it. And I felt that I'd really let everyone down. And I actually apologised to the teacher and said, I'm so sorry that I pulled out of it. And it really taught me something, because I'd never, ever, ever since pulled out of something. Even if I'm really, really scared, I'm like, I'm never doing it, because it made me sick. You know, I suffered more not doing than I ever would have, even if I'd done it and done awful.
But that's, I suppose, goes to that being honest with yourself thing. A lot of people will put a reason or an excuse or a barrier up to hold themselves in that comfortable place. You know, as I said, I see it a lot with boxing. Oh, I can't spar this week. I forgot my gum shield. Or that's a running joke that people who don't actually want to spar won't bring their gum shield. Or, you know, I don't think I am going to be able to have this fight because of X, Y, and Z. Rather than having a really honest conversation with themselves and saying, do I want this? You know, would my efforts be better placed somewhere else? Because you're going to constantly live in that feeling, I suppose. You're saying you had that feeling of failure a little bit, like you should have gone for it, you know?
So did you have that feeling that your efforts should be somewhere else? Then you kind of hinted at earlier with law then. Did you feel like, actually, this is not actually what I want to do? You talked about creativity, and business is an incredibly creative, everything is problem solving, it's creativity. So was there kind of that realisation with yourself, that honest chat of it's not quite what I want to do?
Yeah, absolutely. And it was a really difficult conversation for me to have with myself, because I'd worked incredibly hard to pass the bar. I failed my final exam 3 times. I'd locked myself in a room for a good 11 hours a day, just focusing so hard to make it happen. And it was almost like a tick box. Like I wanted to say to myself that I could have done it. It wasn't even so much like I was in love with the career. It was, who the hell am I? This girl from this working class place with a mum as a cleaner. Who do I think I am taking the bar? And it was to prove to myself, do you know what? You really can do anything. So when I did it, and I did it for a while, and I did enjoy it. I used to go to court about 3-4 times a week. But the pressure to do so well every single day was enormous, and it was swallowing up my whole life and really wasn't making me happy. So at that point I had to assess and think, do I want to play it safe, stay in this comfortable career for the next 30 years and 50 years or whatever till my retirement, and live a life of, like you said, no what's the word, enrichment?
Yeah, like not regretting and like living what you want to enjoy.
Exactly.
So we're going to talk a little bit about the business in part two, because the story of actually why I got into boxing, I think, is very, very powerful. And I think, I suspect, has been a big motivator, I suspect, for, you know, what you're doing now. So we're going to delve into that. And some of that will tie in the apprentice kind of part and where that plays in. But just as we come to the end of part one, then, I guess, maybe a consideration on that confidence piece. What has the apprentice either taught you, what have you seen about being confident or how to be confident? Because, you know, I've watched the show for many, many years, and, you know, it's clear to me that, you know, you have to go in these challenges or tasks, and, you know, you're trying to advocate for yourself in situations you're not necessarily always the most comfortable. You're out of your comfort zone. It's not your area of knowledge, and all of a sudden you're trying to advocate or lead the team or whatever. So what have you kind of seen that perhaps you can share with people that's useful in terms of being confident in kind of those situations of, oh my God, what am I doing here?
I mean, this probably doesn't sound great, but I think the reality of life is the only person you can really, truly, in your core, ever count on is you. So when I was in a situation amongst 18 of the candidates, no contact with home, no contact with anything I'm familiar with or things that make me feel safe, you have to really say, okay, I got this. Like, I'm not going to lean on anyone or rely on anyone. I'm going to trust in everything that I know, and I'm going to lean into my own gut instinct, and all I can do is what feels right in this exact moment.
That's actually really powerful. It's that point of, like, actually, when it comes to being confident, who else have you got to be leaning on? It's only you. Like, it's like that kind of thing of, like, I don't know if I quite so agree in all aspects, but, you know, if you want a job done properly, do it yourself. But I guess in the sense of, like, if you're going to go for this, it's only you that can go for this fully and 100%. Yeah. No one else can do it for you, yeah. Can they? You've got to do it.
And I think that, in fact, going back to lessons learned from The Apprentice, one of the things is definitely learning to lean on people. I think that's important, and I wouldn't want to negate that, because in terms of building and growing something, it's good. But I think when your back's against the wall, and the same, you know, in a boxing ring, you're in there alone, your coaches are outside, but you're in that moment, you have to make decisions for yourself.
You've got to take the punches.
Exactly. And I think as dire as it might sound that you're really truly alone in the world and you can only rely on yourself, there's also a huge power to that, because when you do learn to go, do you know what, I'm really comfortable with what I singularly have to offer, the world's your oyster. You can take on anything, and I suppose that helps me walk into any room, because I'm not dependent on somebody else's go ahead or waiting for someone's say so or someone's, you know, approval. It really is just me versus the task in hand, and in The Apprentice that was many.
Well, I mean, I must say that's a great piece of advice, and probably a great point for us to end part one on. I guess that thing of, like, just go for it. You only get one life, as cliche as it is. This is you, make the most of it and do what you can.
Really,
go for it.
Really go for it, and truly do not care what anyone says. I one thing that always makes me reflect and think, wow, I really don't know why I'm holding back on something, is when you'll see it sometimes online and someone will take a speck of you and then zoom out and zoom out and zoom out and to a galaxy in a universe, and you think, I'm actually so small and insignificant. Yeah. You know, and you think people
That's
are scared
so
of public speaking or that
so true.
One meeting that they've got coming up, and these are just tiny little bites of this much bigger picture.
You're literally around in the kind of broadness or the greatness, really, of the universe. You're around for like a moment, not even a moment in time. It's a click of the fingers. I had this conversation with my mum the other day, finally, after we were talking about our, you know, thinking of things that have happened in your life, and sometimes how we, like, really heavily weigh on things. It's like, in three generations, no one will even know your name.
Yeah,
that's reality.
Yeah.
Maybe four, maybe if you really smash it, someone will remember. But in four generations, no one is going to remember your name, let alone your problems.
Exactly.
Your grandchildren will, but your great-great, and certainly great-great-great-grandchildren will have no idea who you were or what you did. That's the reality
of it. When you think about it, it's actually quite conceited and self-absorbed to think
it
that,
is.
You know,
it
these
is.
difficult moments are so big, when really they're
even
not.
The most painful moments. And I get comfort from it. We're going to talk in part two about using grief as a motivator, but I actually get comfort in grief as well, because I think, you know, it's awful losing my brother and him dying of suicide, the awful thing that happened, but actually, in three or four generations, none of it will matter. That's the truth, and that's not any disrespect to him or his memory for obvious reasons, but that's the reality of it. So even your most difficult things, they will pass in time.
Yeah.
As in, time will not necessarily remember them.
Time is a big motivator for me, because I've always been obsessed with getting stuff done while I was young. I look at my life now, I'm 29, and I think, oh, there's so much I haven't done yet, so much I still should have achieved, and I get really frustrated with myself, because I thought I should have had all this done when I was 25. And so I look at my life like a whole chapter of different sections, and one thing that, you know, a good quote for you, Alex, is Muhammad Ali quote, suffer now and live the rest of your life as a champion. So I think to myself, in this first chapter of my life, these early 20s, all this time, suffer, work, graft, you know, and then one day there will be something amazing that will happen. You know, it can't all be for nothing.
Interesting. Yeah, absolutely. What a great quote to end this part with. Thank you everyone for listening to part one. We'll see you, well, either it'll be tomorrow if you're listening on a Monday, or if you're a Behind the Stompcast subscriber, you could have listened to this from midnight on Friday if you're really keen, all the way ahead of people that listen on a Monday. Anyway, see you all very soon. Goodbye.
If you're looking for more mental fitness content, check out my book, The Mind Manual, Mental Fitness Tools for Everyone, and A Better Day and A Better Day Journal for Children. And if you have a man in your life, or indeed if you're a man listening to this, make sure you check out Mettle, the app, M-E-T-T-L-E, mental fitness tools that are designed for men. Download now.